welcome to Tea and Strumpets, a Regency romance review. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Kelsey.
And today we are joined by Maisie Eddings, who is a bookstagrammer, a cat mom, and an author. Ooh. And that's new since we last spoke to her. So Maisie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. I can't wait to talk all about Bridgertons.
Yes. We're doing it 8 times just on the record. So I feel you there. So Maisie, we've been asking all our guests, if they want to tell our listeners a little bit more about themselves. But before I open it up to you, I want to tell all of our listeners, many of which, have found us because of Bridgerton. We had Maisie on the podcast a while ago, a year ago.
Yeah.
I was going to say almost this time last year.
Yeah, we did this again. That was the same when we went on Jeff and Will's podcast. It was almost a year. Anyhow, okay. Yeah. The point is, this is our annual chat with Maisie.
Perfect. I love it.
But when we were talking to you then, you were making edits on a book that I think you were submitting or you were waiting to hear back, right? And now that book has come a little bit farther. So why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah. So this time last year, I had signed with my agent in October 2019. And then I was working through edits on the book. And then we went on submission in mid-February of 2020. And my book is a contemporary rom-com, and it's about horny dentists falling in love and lots of oral puns. But it's also own voices for mental illness, anxiety disorders, and looking kind of at how that's reflected in medical fields and how that's kind of stigmatized and everything. But yeah, it went out to editors in February of 2020. And then we all know what happened in March of 2020. And nice. That was really fun. And then it got picked up in mid-July of 2020. And it's coming out with St. Martin's Press in 2022. So as far as I know, it's called A Brush with Love. I should probably say that. Yeah, but it's like, I don't know. It's been a crazy year where it kind of feels like all my dreams have come true. So
good for you. I mean, at least someone's dreams came true in 2020.
I know, right?
Absolutely. That is so exciting. I feel like we're somehow part of your journey, even though we weren't even a little bit. But just hearing about it then, I'm so excited for you.
Thank you. And I just turned in revisions for the second book too. So
my goodness.
There's gonna be two.
Wow. You're so on top of it. And you're so busy. I follow you now on Instagram, and it's great because you and I will chit chat in the DMs via Instagram stories, which is fabulous.
Love it.
Yeah. And I'm like, God, this girl's so busy and she wrote a book. I'm over here just trying to have one job. And I'm like, this is overwhelming.
Oh, believe me, there are a lot of frustrated tears at least every other day, but it's worth it. And I'm going to be graduating in May of 2022. So that's going to be a big year.
Big year for Maisie. Another year for all her dreams to come true.
Oh, thank you. That's so sweet. But it does feel like you guys have been part of that journey. And you guys were there at the very beginning when things were, just taking off and stuff. So and we'll have to talk next year.
Yes, we will.
I mean, I'm going to take all the credit then, okay, for your dreams coming true. No, just kidding. We had nothing to do with it.
You guys are my good luck charm.
Oh, thanks. I'll take that. Yeah. Well, so the reason that we invited Maisie on here was, all of the things we've already talked about, but also because Maisie loves Bridgerton and we love Bridgerton. And this is a match made in heaven for chatting about all of that. But Maisie, do you want to tell our listeners a little bit more about your relationship with the Bridgerton books?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've always been a huge historical romance and Regency fan. I think I kind of cut my teeth on it with Tessa Dare. And that's how I got introduced to the subgenre. And then I just think so then the Bridgertons, just what like an amazing series, right? Like it just it spans so many years and years, mm-hmm. and like so many different family dynamics. And yeah, I love the books. They're just like, I don't know, it's like taking a soul vacation reading them. You know, like your heart feels good while you're, you know, taking it all in, and like they're fun and they're funny and they're unique. But then the show, oh my God. I am just like beside myself. I like Christmas Day, that is all I did was sit and watch Bridgertons, because like I was quarantining and stuff, and so I just binged it, and I mean it was just, like my jaw was on the floor the entire time I was watching it. So I'm a big fan.
Excellent. Well, before we get too much into that, because we have the rest of our podcast dedicated to that, do you have a favorite book or character, and why?
Okay, yeah, I do. It's the Viscount Who Loved Me. Anthony is such a dick, and I am trash for that. And like, I love Kate Sheffield. I love their book. I love how Kate brings him to his knees. She is such a boss ass bitch. And like, she just is so like feisty, and he just falls for her completely. And I love their book. I love Newton, the destructive corgi. Oh my God. Yeah. So that one, I think hands down, is probably my favorite. But I mean, each one holds like a spot in my heart, and I think they're all really fun. But anytime Anthony pops up in the later books too, I'm always like, oh, Anthony, how's Kate?
Oh, I love it. There's like another book later on and Kate like massively features it. I'm like, hi, Kate. I love you.
Hi, Kate. Oh my God. Yeah. I like fangirl for Kate Sheffield. She's just like so cool.
I know.
I think we can say, like, you know, we're trying to make our episodes like non-spoilers in the beginning. But honestly, like, if you've listened to six of our episodes now, like, you've heard spoilers. So, the point is that yes, Kate is going to happen. Like, we finally know for absolute sure that they are casting Kate for next season. So, like, this is brilliant, and we'll discuss more of that. But like,
I mean, I know that like it was never confirmed, and we were all just a little bit nervous, but like as very strict fans, like they did us well in the first season. If they had not cast a Kate Sheffield and had gone a completely different route, I think there would have been riots in the street. No, like sorry, I know that's a touchy subject, but I'm just saying, like, how many views have been happening with this Bridgerton thing? It's like, yeah, Netflix's most streamed show ever.
Yeah, ever.
And if they had not had Kate Sheffield in season two, I'm sorry. I would have boycotted.
Listen, I'm going to boycott. Here is my big thing. So one, I do not want a love triangle with Sienna. And I feel like they're going to do us dirty, and they're going to do it. Ugh. And then two, I just like my ultimate dream is that we have a very graphic scene where Kate Sheffield sits on Anthony's face. And like... That is just my ultimate dream for season two. I'm manifesting that into the world. Sorry to go there, but like we just need a marriage montage like we had in season one.
Oh, yes.
So there for it. And let's talk more about that later, because we cannot just leave it at that. But I think if we keep going right now, we'll just talk about that for
sorry,
an hour.
Sorry, sorry. One track mind when it comes to Anthony.
So do you have, though, a favorite character from the show? Like somebody who stood out on the show that maybe you didn't love in the books quite as much, but their you know, interpretation really did it for you?
I thought that Eloise and Lady Danbury both stole mm-hmm. the show. Like their acting was mm-hmm. just spectacular, flawless. Like I am such big fans of them. And yeah, I especially thought like what they did with Eloise's character was so much more dynamic than we even see in the books, and her book in particular. Mm-hmm. I just thought she was like so fresh, so funny. And then I also loved her relationship with Benedict.
We've talked about it so much, but I mean, like, watching the two of them with their secret smoke breaks in the garden.
I cannot. I was just sitting on my couch screaming. Like, I could not handle it. And Benedict gives me major, like, the actor who plays him gives me major Paul Rudd vibes.
Like, yes, that's why I love him. Paul Rudd is, like, super my type. Like, nerdy, the handsome nerdy guy. Like, yeah, just like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yes. It's, like, so approachable that he becomes, like, unapproachable. Like, it's like this weird dynamic of, like, yes. attractiveness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I loved what they did. And I thought that really stood out in the show. And like, and then I loved that they included the queen too. Like, that was, you know, a unique addition that we didn't see in the books. And she just played flawlessly and like very human character while still having like all this power and stuff. So, I mean, yeah, I just thought everybody did such an amazing job.
Well, yeah, we're in agreement. So,
absolutely.
So let's dive in a little bit deeper. And Kelsey, you want to take us away on the synopsis?
I shall take us away. So, episode 7, Oceans Apart. So Simon and Daphne's marriage has taken a major blow after the events of the previous episode. Despite the fact that they're at odds, there is a simmering sexual tension between them that they just cannot seem to fight. And it all comes to a head when Simon confronts Daphne on the staircase after she has announced their marriage is over. Things intensify as Simon goes down on Daphne, but when Daphne suggests they continue to the bedroom, Simon then delivers his death blow. If you are with child, then I shall stay and do my duty to support you both. And Daphne asks, what if she isn't pregnant? To which Simon states, then we shall remain married in name only. Ugh. Soon after, Daphne leaves for town because Colin is dealing with a scandal because Marina has been outed by Lady Whistledown as pregnant and has been hiding it. So that's a scandal. So Daphne's going to help her brother. And with Daphne acting as chaperone, Colin confronts Marina and she confirms that she's pregnant, and Colin feels super betrayed. And Marina's like, I don't want to be shamed about this. I just did what I thought I needed to do. This was my only option as far as I'm concerned. And Colin is like such sweet Colin. He's so hurt, but he's like, if I knew about the secret, I probably would have still married you. But because you deceived me, I'm out. And so anyway, due to the scandal of Marina, the Featheringtons become person non grata at town events. And Eloise, who's still trying to fulfill her mission to the queen and unmask Lady Whistledown, she and Daphne are not happy to see the treatment of the Featheringtons by the ton. Daphne goes so far as to visit Marina and apologizes to her for everything, even though she had nothing to do with it. And she states she understands her lack of choice in these matters. Marina talks about George and how perfect he was, and Daphne wants to know what station George fights for so she can help find him. She wants Marina to have a better life because she feels that she deserves it. Simon, on the other hand, has been fighting with Anthony because both are dunderheads and calling the other on their bullshit. When Daphne returns and finds Simon tending some wounds, which he does not mention are from her brother, she offers to tend his cuts, which leads to a kiss because of our aforementioned ever-present sexual tension has not lessened.
Nope. Also, Kelsey, any time that cuts or wounds are tended it leads to a kiss.
It leads to a kiss. Oh, my goodness. And again, Daphne tells Simon that a child would be a blessing. But he pushes her away and reveals how strongly he feels about his deathbed promise to his hateful father to be the end of the Hastings line. Daphne reminds Simon that he made a vow to her, but Simon believes his vow to his father supersedes his marriage vow to her. Daphne states they will be miserable for the rest of their lives. At the Queen's concert, Benedict tries to speak to Lord Granville. Granville tells Benedict that he's in love with Lord Weatherby and that he risks his life every day for love by masking it with a marriage. He explains how difficult it is to love outside the traditions of society. Sir Granville tells Benedict that he's all talk, opening Benedict's eyes further to the world at large. Anthony sees Sienna at the concert, who appears to be with another man, which, you know, bothers him a lot. And during the performance, Simon reaches for Daphne's hand, but Daphne cannot stand this level of intimacy if he cannot give her more. So she leaves. At the Featherington residence, Penelope checks on Marina, only to find her on the floor unconscious after she's tried getting rid of her unborn baby. And Daphne, after leaving Simon in the box, takes herself to the ladies' retiring room and finds that she has had her period. And Lady Bridgerton, who followed Daphne in, holds her in her arms as Daphne sobs. And then we cut to Simon as he watches the concert, unaware of Daphne's anguish.
Whew. It was a lot.
That was a heavy ending. I was it was.
I know. Very emotional. And such a touching scene between Lady Bridgerton and Daphne.
Oh, I know. Oh.
That was definitely, I think, like one of the scenes like where the emotion in the show like really got to me. Like mm-hmm. some of the other scenes, it's like, oh, drama, my goodness, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. But this one I felt really like pulled. I mean, I think, I don't know, like I have tried to have a baby once in my life and, you know, luckily I was able to get pregnant. But, you know, when you're first trying to get pregnant, it's really scary. And you're like, is this going to work? Like, you know, especially if maybe they've told you that speaking of the baby, you're OK, honey. But especially if they've told you, you know, that it might be difficult or you haven't had regular periods or even if you're normal, like fertility is hard and scary. And for Daphne, like she only had, you know, in her eyes, that chance.
Yeah.
And so that was very sad.
Oh, just devastating. And then to also know that compound it like without a child, like she's like, oh, and then now my marriage is really over. And like, she was thinking that the child was a chance for them to like bond mm-hmm. over something. And now there's no child. And she's like, now we're done. What am I going to do?
Yeah. And I thought it was really, you know, because the whole episode we see Daphne and Lady Bridgerton kind of like confronting each other about how naive Daphne was kind of forced to be about all of it. And just mm-hmm. how like, how much that's really just blinded her to the way of the world. And then kind of seeing them like find comfort with each other was a really powerful moment too. And very beautiful. And yeah, the whole thing was just very emotional. And the optics of like Simon sitting there and watching, you know, the orchestra playing, and then you hear Daphne sobbing in the background.
Yeah.
And it was just like very, wow. Like it gave me chills.
Yeah. And maybe I should preface this because I said like he's unaware of the anguish happening with Daphne. For me watching it, I think he was aware. Like, I feel mm-hmm. like because we can hear the sobs and I feel like he's there like, I know what's happened, but like I can't mm-hmm. go comfort her because of my manly man heart and my manly man vows. But it's like killing him inside too because he can't stand, you know, listening to her be so upset. And oh, that was heart-wrenching.
It was like a very, I mean, once again, all of these like subtle and not so subtle demonstrations of like toxic masculinity where Simon's experiencing his own internal anguish and, you know, he had trust broken and like, you know, just this huge violation in like their marital bed. And he has his own internal anguish, but he won't let himself break down. He won't like.
Oh,
like
no, he can't.
No, he can't.
He's a steely Duke. He can't do that.
Yeah. And Daphne even says to him, like, why won't you unfold yourself to me? And he really thinks that he cannot. And, you know, it's kind of the narrative that we see throughout the show that these gender roles have really been so destructive to people and like their ability to connect. And yeah, it was really powerful.
Mm-hmm. I felt like another kind of part of that during this episode was, you know, what you touched on a minute ago, which is, you know, Daphne yelling at Violet and saying, you know, like, you fucked up, right? Like you mm-hmm. didn't prepare me. And when she did that, I have a note that I wrote, like, Daphne yelling at Violet is everything I ever wanted from reading the books. Like I was so angry at Violet in that book. I was like, Violet, it like kind of goes back to you, man. Like things could have unfurled so differently. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we did our rereading of the books, you know, Kelsey and I really were like, wait a minute. We don't like Violet in the Duke. Yeah. Like, why do we remember Violet as this wonderful character? Mm-hmm. And I think the show got it right. I was very surprised that they really did have her blunder so bad. But then they, like, one of the things in the book that's so irritating is Daphne never kind of talks to her mom about that.
Yeah.
I thought it was something that the show did really well, which was letting us kind of have that emotional relief getting to see Daphne, you know, tell her mom how she felt and what that did to her.
I think it made that relationship stronger in the end. Mm-hmm. Like,
yes.
And that's something that we get from Lady Bridgerton in the books is that like she does have such a strong bond with her kids. And like you said, Zoe, we didn't get the Daphne confrontation in the books with her mother. And this was very much like needed.
yeah, very cathartic moment and very, I just think it was very, just to reiterate what you guys said, it was so needed and it was kind of missing in the books and I was glad. And it makes Violet like a very multidimensional character because you do see this person that's like a great mom and, you know, but you also see somebody who had 8 kids and like she can't tell her daughter what to expect in marriage and stuff like that. So yeah, it was just, yeah, very, very well done by the show.
Yeah. Well, and we also get so many other good tidbits in this episode. We get like Benedict confronting Sir Granville, which is very exciting.
Yes.
That was such, I wish I'd written down his lines. I didn't write down Sir Granville's lines, but I just remember I wrote a note that said that, where is the note there? But basically just that like what Sir Granville said was truly like heart-wrenching and beautifully written. I loved mm-hmm. his lines about, you know, love and risk and all these things. It was really great.
Yeah, that was gorgeous. And when he says, like, you know, we can't even smile at each other without making sure that nobody else will notice or that that's where the title of the episode comes in, right? Where it's like mm-hmm. you're in the same room, but you feel oceans apart. And I was just, I mean, yeah, that was so moving.
Yeah. Well, and I love it, too, because Benedict walks away. I mean, he's from such like a very traditional family and like very traditional family expectations. And the whole him, you know, going into the art scene and, you know, exploring that part of him where he felt he couldn't before. And then meeting Sir Granville. I keep wanting to say Lord Granville, but that's a different show.
You're right. Oh my gosh.
But like meeting Sir Granville and like catching him in that like act of the man and then being like not offended but like very intrigued but then very confused mm-hmm. and he's like really on his own arc that I mean we've said time and time again like we're waiting to explore. Like we are very excited for yes. Benedict to explore this arc and we want more of it.
I cannot wait to see what they do with him because there is like so much potential here, like with just how they've set him up and like, mm-hmm. oh my God, I can't wait. And I also think it's interesting too, because, you know, you see him then leave and go and have like the start of a relationship with the modiste or what is her name?
Not the modiste. It's the friend of the modiste because Benedict's no. the modiste. Sorry, I was thinking Lord Granville's wife.
Okay,
Her Madame Delacroix.
Yes. Well, and it's interesting because like his entire book is based on like the idea that he can't be with somebody that's like in, you know, not the nobility or whatever. So it'll be interesting to see how they change his entire storyline to fit the show. I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm interested if they make him bi or they make him gay. I mean, we've said this like every episode, but I still am interested. I'm interested to see them do a male-male Cinderella if they go that far. Like,
oh my
I think that would be really cool.
That would be amazing. Oh my God, I didn't even think of that. Stop it right now.
And Zoe loves Benedict's Cinderella story. And so she's like, I still want this to be a Cinderella story. And she's like, you can change the partner, that's fine, but make it Cinderella.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like, oh my God, I did not even think of that. That would be so good. And that book is one of the best Insta loves, I think, like I've read, where the connection is so visible. Yeah. Because that's so hard to pull off. And that book really, really does it well. Oh, you just opened a whole new world of like possibilities for my brain.
Well, we'll see. I'm really interested because it's like now that they've kind of opened the door to Benedict being queer, it's like, are they going to go all the way with it? Are they going to give him a full season of a queer love story as the star of it? Are they not? You know, how are they going to – are they going to do his love story later and like do Eloise before that? Mm. I've heard – you know, we've had discussions with other people too about Eloise and her story and how that's going to go. One of the things I wanted to kind of circle back to in this episode was which I made a comment to in your synopsis, Kelsey, which is like, she dabs at his cut, you know, and that leads to,
hi, I'm talking about a book. Well, actually it's a TV show. Can I keep talking?
Yeah, you're smiling at me. It's very cute.
But she dabs at his cut, and I have a note there too, where I'm literally, and he like, you know, takes an intake of breath, and I was like, literally, is he Beast from Beauty and the Beast? Like, what is going on? You know, it's very romance. Yeah. And I mean,
it's funny you mentioned that, because like, part of the reason I was late with this was because I read a whole Kerrigan Byrne book last night, because I have issues, and I was up way too late reading it, but it was really funny because there's a scene where there's a cut and he's like, I must doctor my own wound. She's like, let me stitch it up. And then it like leads to more things, and then like to do my synopsis, and they're like, oh, the cut. And I was like, ah, it's just a classic scene in a romance novel. Just classic.
Incredible. I mean, yeah, it was just, and then he's like, he like grabs her, and then she sits on his lap as she's dabbing at it. I'm like, oh my God, swoon. Ouch.
No, but I think there's just so much. And I mean, we haven't even talked about Marina and like Colin. And it's very interesting because Colin is very much like, I've read things where they refer to Colin as very like naive in the show. And it's very interesting because Colin's never been very naive. He's just kind of like jovial going through life. Like everyone just likes Colin. Like that's just who he is. But I do like that we're kind of seeing this moment where Colin has to grow up a bit. Mm-hmm. Where he, and you, we know Colin from reading the books, and we're like, if Marina had just told him, he would have married her, and that would have been the end of that. Like, we know that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, too, like, we see this growing up moment for Colin, and I feel like that's just going to be very intriguing because, like, that's what sends him away, essentially. Yeah. And I just want to see what's up because, honestly, you know, it's hard because it happens in Benedict's book, but like, let's talk about the scene with Colin and Penelope, where like his brothers are making fun of him.
Okay, wait. Spoilers for Colin and Penelope's love story. So if you don't want to hear this at this point, then go ahead
Going to say it anyway. I was just saying that was a very pivotal moment for them. Okay. Going into details. I'm just saying it's a pivotal moment for him. And we saw that as kind of being like Colin's like growing up moment and like his sending away moment. So it's very interesting that they're doing it now in this book with this moment. So
I was just going to say, I think it's also going to like lead well into the idea that now he's like, he doesn't believe in like being emotionally vulnerable because he's only been hurt anytime he's pursued something like that. Right. So he's going to be like all guarded with it.
And for Colin, who really truly believes in love, Colin really truly believes in love.
He really does. Yeah. And so it will be interesting too. And it like, I don't know. I feel like there will be some repercussion. Can we say who he ends up with? Like, is that a big spoiler? No. Okay. So yeah, obviously Colin and Penelope end up together, but I feel like that's going to even add some more drama to it because Penelope, wait. Yeah. Penelope. I was like, is her name Heather? Feather Pennington. Penelope Featherington. Yeah, outs Marina in the way that she did to protect Colin, but I feel like that could like really cause some drama and some tension for their love story.
I didn't even think about that, but you're right. Yes.
For sure. It was interesting, you know, because I agree, kind of, Kelsey, what you were getting at with talking about Colin right now is like this episode, he's pretty dang serious. And to be honest, he's pretty dang serious the whole series. And so I wrote in my notes for this episode, I wish Colin was funnier. Like, I wish we had a moment. Like, I don't think we had one laugh at Colin moment. We had singing.
There was the tomato plant thing. That was funny.
Tomato plant? I don't remember that.
She's like, because everyone brings Marina flowers, and he's like, I must be unique. Next time I'll bring you a tomato plant.
Okay. So, but I still wish we'd had more. I think,
I agree.
The humor was definitely not as high in the show as it is in the books. And that was okay. But, I didn't think like the show was bad because of it, but I think the show could have been even better with some humor, some of Lady Whistledown's wit, rather than just, you know, small bits of narration and humor. I just wish there had been more because that's so much of what I love about the books. Yeah. And Colin is pretty dang funny. Like, to the fact that sometimes in the books I found like it got kitschy, like his wanting to eat all the time.
Oh God,
was like a little bit much, you know. Like everyone's like, it's like a dog who's starving at points. Yeah. For me, but I was like, well, we could have used a little of that.
Mm-hmm. There was like no levity to his character. And like, he didn't like charm the pants off of you like he does in the books. You know, like mm-hmm. he's so charming in the books. And you just didn't, he just felt like a little boy.
And the thing is, like, the dimensions of Colin's character are he's charming and funny and actually really, really sweet, like, mm-hmm. right? A really mm-hmm. good human being, which we saw a little bit of with that, like, you know, picking Penelope over Cressida a moment. Mm-hmm. But I just wish we'd had a little bit of the humor, because I liked that they brought in the serious part of his character now in a lot of ways. But that's also such an incredible discovery when Penelope finds out about it in her own story. So, I mean, so mm-hmm. I'm interested to see kind of how that all ends up going. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think too, I mean, like we've said, like they had a lot of setting up and world building to do in this season. And like Daphne and Simon's love story obviously was at the heart of it. And theirs is a rather more serious love story. It's not full of levity or humor, like say Anthony and Kate's love story is. So I'm just interested to see if, because now that we know the characters, when we get season two, if they'll kind of put more of that humor in, because we'll already be invested in the characters, and like they can put some more of those levity moments instead of just trying to constantly like further along a story, because there's so many moving parts.
I think that's a great prediction, but like, don't you think the argument also stands for, because Daphne and Simon's love story was so kind of serious, don't you think like it could have really benefited from humor that Colin and Lady Whistledown could have brought to the show?
Yes. And do I want to hear Julie Andrews deliver some Lady Whistledown wit? Yes, 100%. All my heart.
Yeah, I think, and even like some of the, you know, one moment that sticks out in the series, and I think it's like, again, this shows how much more room there was for the humor. But like when Lady Danbury approaches them at the ball and like Anthony, Benedict and Colin all try to scram at once mm-hmm. and then like she catches them. Like they could have had so many small moments like that where it was like just, you know, like.
And that's such a great moment because it happens straight in the book. She's like, nope, can't leave now. Nope. I've caught you.
And they're all like, Lady Danbury. Oh my gosh. I thought that was so, I rewound that scene so many times. And you know what else was really funny? And this actually happened in the episode, this episode 7 was when Anthony was drinking that beer, when he like goes to the club and sees Simon and he's like, oh, I just love a good beer. And he's like, the color, and he's such a twat about it. And I'm just like, I was cracking up at that because he's like, he just pokes people right at their like, right. Yeah. And so I'm hoping that what you're saying is right and we will get more levity or even just more of like that dry wit and humor in these coming seasons. But I do agree, Zoe, like it could have benefited from a little bit more lightness and just like almost that goofy charm that the books hold.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was one also great kind of humorous but wonderful line from Anthony in this episode, which is when he is talking to Simon and he tells Simon that Daphne is incapable of fucking up this severely. And so what a great line.
That's that whole great scene, like, oh my God, when Simon just starts like laying in on Anthony about how badly Anthony's doing at running the family, and then you see all the emotion in Anthony's face and when he like shakes his head and he's so distraught because he's, you know, they're talking about like his father and everything, who once you read Anthony's book you understand just like how crucial that is for him. But you guys, that fight scene, like when Anthony and Simon slam into that table, I was like the most erotic thing I've ever seen. Like, why was that? Like, that was my soul like projected to a different plane when that I just could not believe it. It was so like boom, boom, boom. Yeah, that was wild.
I wrote, ooh, it's a good fight. Like, I was like, and so
they had heart and soul in that fight. You were like,
oh, no, I know. And just like, God, because everything Simon says is so on the nose. And then Anthony's like reaction and like all the trauma. And again, the toxic masculinity where he like, mm-hmm. can't express that he's still mourning the loss of his father after all these years. And he's like crumbling under the stress of having to run such a large family at a relatively young age. Like, and then you see it and it like, it manifests as physical violence. And again, it's just like this perfect example. And honestly,
a perfect example of men with daddy issues.
Yes. Oh my God. They have acute cases of daddy issues. Like, and then what I love too is like, in every interview, or every time Jonathan Bailey, the actor that plays Anthony, like discusses toxic masculinity in an interview, I just like, I want to cry. I'm like, I love this man so much. Like, gets it.
But I'm sure you've been really diving deep into Tessa Dare's theme.
Oh, well, I can neither confirm nor deny that I have a Jonathan Bailey Stan account, like that like Tessa Dare may or may not follow. Like, we may or may not have interacted on there. I won't say one way or the other, but like, yeah. I am living for the Goat Anthony. It's hashtag Goathany content, and it's just kind of everything.
Oh my gosh. Well, I think we're ready to talk about this whole series. I know we've kind of been doing it a little bit in this episode, but like, let's get into those spoilers. But before we do that, shall we adjourn to the parlor?
We shall.
So today we want to take you out of England and over to Washington, D.C. to share with you Rebecca Zanetti's Driven, the fourth installment of her heart-pumping romantic suspense series featuring operatives in a secretive Homeland Defense Department. All of her previous deep ops releases, Hidden, Taken, and Fallen, were USA Today bestsellers. And Zanetti is an author of over 50 romantic suspense, dark paranormal, and contemporary romances that are known for her high-octane action, scorching sensuality, and strong yet emotionally complex characters.
Yes. So to tell you more about Driven, we have unswerving. Angus Force is determined to hunt down the serial killer he'd once shot dead, or so he thought. But an anonymous source reports that Lassiter is alive. Force hasn't slept since, knowing it's only a matter of time before the surgeon strikes again. And soon a body is found bearing Lassiter's same maniacal MO. It's just the beginning of a murderous trail blazing through D.C. and Virginia right to Force's backyard. Unstoppable, Nari Zhang is the shrink for the ragtag deep ops unit, though she isn't Force's shrink, which is a very good thing, because once they're thrown together on the case, their attraction is explosive and irresistible. They'll just have to fight that much harder to keep the heat between them from flaming out of control. But things are about to become far more challenging and deadly than they could have imagined. Unhinged. Once the killer catches a glimpse of Nari, she becomes his new obsession. She is now the focus point for both Force and Lassiter in a dangerous dance for survival.
And after spending time as an art curator, Senate aide, lawyer, college professor, and a hearing examiner, Zanetti now culminates all of her experiences in stories about alpha males and the women who claim them. And you can visit her online at RebeccaZanetti.com. And you can find her books wherever books are sold, and we are going to link to that very handily in our show notes.
And today we also have some listener mail. Listener Hannah reached out to us with a fabulous suggestion. She says, "Hello, I was just listening to your latest episode and you mentioned wanting to read more audiobooks. I really recommend getting Overdrive, and you just need a library card." And that's overdrive.com. "I read 50 books a year, and the majority of them are audiobooks. Happy reading, Hannah."
And thank you so much, Hannah. I really do appreciate that. I've heard of Overdrive before, and I've been like meaning to get on that. And so, funny story, last March, I was literally like going to go to the library and get a library card, and I couldn't make it there because I kept trying to go on Sundays and my library is closed on Sundays. And then
quarantine libraries are happened. Always closed on Sundays,
yeah, Zoe. Well, it had been years since I'd been to the library. And so then quarantine happened. And so now I'm just like, can I get a library card? Like, without being able to go into the library and show them my ID? I don't know.
That's really interesting because I was actually thinking the same thing. We have a fabulous library not that far from my house. And I'm just like, for some reason, I forgot it existed until quarantine happened. And I'm like, but I want to go to the library. But I can't go to the library.
And Overdrive is fabulous. Like I've heard people talk about it before, and then I consistently forget it. And I need to take advantage of that. And I've got some librarian friends, so I just need to get my act together and follow up. So Hannah, thank you so much for reminding me and nudging me in that direction. And I'll keep all you listeners updated when I finally get my library card.
Excellent. And if you'd like to interact with us more on episode 7 or any of our other Bridgerton recaps, you can interact with us on social media using hashtag BBEE My Bridgerton.
And if you'd like to get in touch with us with your thoughts about this or any other episode, you can send us an email at romancepod@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at T as in Tom, N as in Nancy Strumpets, on Facebook /T and Strumpets, and on YouTube by searching our name. And as we've mentioned the past couple episodes, we're really looking to up our YouTube subscriber count. So if you have any interaction on YouTube, please hit that subscribe button so we can unlock all some new features for, you know, high subscriber counts. Because yay!
Yes, that'll be really awesome for us. So smash that like and subscribe. And of course, if you like what you're hearing, we would be so honored if you'd leave us a review. Reviews on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, or wherever else you can review us really help other listeners find us. And you can tell a friend too, because word of mouth is one of the best ways I've discovered podcasts, and your recommendation is a great honor. We're back and ready to talk total spoilers. So like, let's start, Maisie, with you've sort of already mentioned like you're a fan of this Bridgerton thing, but like, what's your overall thoughts about this series?
I thought the show was stunning. Like, I think it's so different from the books. Like, you have to take them as two different things, but yet they're still both wonderful, which mm-hmm. just volumes to how both creators took this storyline and made it something special. And I thought visually it was stunning. I love the costuming. I love the casting. Like, I thought
the casting was just so spot on. So spot on.
Perfect. Like, it was great, so good.
Great talent. Great talent. And everybody really embodied their character. Mm-hmm. Like, they had the spirit. Yes. They had the spirit.
And the butts. Like, I'll say it. We saw a lot of butts on this show, and I was very, like, I appreciate it.
Tot butt. Who had the best butt?
Listen, this is tough, but I have to, like, travel back a couple years, right? I first saw Jonathan Bailey's butt in the summer of 2013. I was watching Broadchurch, and, like, I distinctly remember just being like, because he had a pretty like minor character role, but you do see his butt. And like, I was such like a stan even back then. And like, that's when I started following him on Instagram. And then I kind of like lost my way a little bit and kind of like moved on to other pastures of, you know, like celebrity crushes. But I mean, the fact remains that like, he's kind of always been the butt for me. And so like, I think I might need to pick him, but you know, I mean, you have like a 10-minute montage in episode 6 where they're just like, here's Simon's ass, like from every angle.
Oh yes. You know? That one's great.
I feel like they showed 99% of his body. There was just like a small region that was not shown, like a circular.
Zoe, like don't.
Okay, sorry. But they were like, you know, we saw 99% of him. And I loved it, but no pun intended. Some of his butt shots, Reggae. Okay. Some of Reggae's butt shots, I felt like did not do his butt justice. I felt like a few of the butt shots of his were like awkward angles. And I was like, his butt is better than this.
Yeah. Some of them were unflattering, but I think they just like, they really committed to showing it in all forms. And yes. Also, I mean, nobody's butt always looks good. Like you can find some really weak angles in a mirror and like, you know, so it just added to the human aspect of his character.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this isn't a butt scene. Like there's no butt. I will tell you, I can't remember if it was episode one or episode two, but there's a scene with Anthony and he's with Sienna and she's like sprawled across him, but you see like his whole leg and he's butt naked and he's got his whole leg and you see his full chest and he's like lounging with like a lady between his thighs. And I was like, that, all of that.
Yeah.
Can I just like frame that and have that like in my like naughty corner? Cause like, oh my God, that was beautiful. I was like, yes.
I mean, that's when I knew that the show was art, was like when they had that scene of him like sprawled out like that.
Oh God, yes.
Did you guys see when Aloisa James posted one of her wild covers next to the same scene or a scene from Bridgerton, which with Simon getting up and putting one arm over his knee in bed, and then one of her wild covers is identically the same pose, a guy doing that in bed. And I don't know if that was just like serendipity or if it was like absolutely a nod to the romance novel cover, but like, fuck it. It was amazing.
That was, I did not see her post that, but that is like, I can picture the cover. Like I know exactly which cover it is. Yes. And that is spot on. Oh my God. I mean, this show is just a gift that keeps on giving. And like,
I love it though, because I've seen a thing, like someone was like very offended because it was like in the first 5 minutes, you just see like Jonathan Bailey's butt.
Hell yeah.
Which is great. As he's screwing Sienna against a tree. Also great. And it's so funny because they're like, I believe it was Sienna.
Okay.
Only because who else would he be fucking in this show?
Unfortunately. Yeah.
Anyway, but it's like, it was so great because they're like, yeah. So like all of a sudden we're in the show and we're like, oh, pretty carriages, costumes, but like that's raunchy. Well, and I'm like, I hit that scene and I was like, oh yeah, we're doing it.
Yeah, I was like, yes. Oh my
God. Welcome to romance.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, like think about Lord of Scoundrels, right? Like the beginning of Lord of Scoundrels where it's like literally he's like screwing his friend's wife, right? Like in the very beginning. And you know, it's just, I feel like, hi everybody, this is romance.
It's also very true to life. I mean, like, sex happens and it's like sometimes in like really bizarre places and you're like, you have your servant or handyman or whatever that guy was sitting by with the horses. But like,
And it's like, if this isn't for you, then you know right away, right? Yes. And also, it seems that it was for 82 million of us. So like, maybe as Sarah McLean has said, put more kissing in shows.
I will say that, like, I love that, like, the montage of Daphne and Simon in their honeymoon period. The reason I love that so much is, one, very romance, but also they're doing it, like, all over the place. And I'm just like, yes, because that's romance. Because in romance, you read the scenes and you're like, sexy. I'm not sure how this is physically possible, but, like, bam, I'm here for it. And, yeah, like, same thing. Like, they see her on the stair, on the ladder in the library, and you're like, I feel like that might be slightly dangerous, but whatever. You go, girl.
He's just like rolling around naked on his lawn. And you're just like, you go, king. Like, we love you. Please go for it.
I don't know if this is for me, but I'm having a fun time watching it / reading it. You know, like that's exactly what romance is. It's like this exploration of what does this, you know, mean? Yeah. What do you think about this and that and the other thing? Anyhow, so we have talked a ton about Anthony on this series of episodes because, well, we love Anthony and like, sorry, like we think Anthony is greater than Simon. One of the thing, I mean,
sorry, I mean like
a tiny bit. And this has nothing to do with the actors or the casting or the show. This has to do with the storylines and, you know, the redemption and all those things. I want to make that very clear. Love them like so much both on the show.
And it, honestly, I think that Reggie did a better job with Simon than like a lot of the pages given to him in the books.
100%. Like, I like Simon better at the show. Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing I think the show is missing a little bit is I wish that he had stuttered again when he was mad, which he did in the book. I
love that.
And I feel like that like made my heart crumble. And it was too bad that they didn't bring that in. But anyhow.
No, because they saw him getting like they saw him working past it and like why it was the struggle with his father, but you didn't see him still battling with it. Cause part of the reason Simon is so kind of stoic and like and has this very like regimented way of speaking is because he's like, I cannot stutter.
And they hinted at that when he was making his big declarations to the queen about how like conversation doesn't come naturally or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it just that there was so many small spots where like they really could have made it a very poignant moment to have his stutter come back. And I totally agree with you on that.
But something that I hadn't quite realized, and I feel bad that I didn't realize this, is that, you know, a lot of people are like making all these merch things or talking about the show and, you know, the Bridgerton TikTok musical. They're using the line, I burn for you. And we have to talk about the fact that that is not Simon's line. That is Anthony's line in the book. And so I'm going to read this quote. I'm going to read this quote because I feel like all our listeners need to know how amazing this is because Anthony, oh my God. So he says, listen to me, he said, his voice even and intense, and listen well, because I'm only going to say this once. I desire you. I burn for you. I can't sleep at night for wanting you. Even when I didn't like you, I lusted for you. It's the most maddening, beguiling, damnable thing, but there it is. And if I hear one more word of nonsense from your lips, I'm going to have to tie you to the bloody bed and have my way with you 100 different ways until you finally get it through your silly skull that you are the most beautiful and desirable woman in England. And if anybody else doesn't see that, they're all bloody fools.
Oh my God.
I got tingles.
I'm so glad you got tingles from me, but like, can you imagine if Jonathan Bailey said that?
Oh my God.
I'm going to throw up out of excitement. Oh my God. Listen, but the part for me that really sticks out in that, because that quotation lives in my head rent-free 24/7. Like, not a day goes by where I don't think about that. Constantly. But the part that sticks out for me is when he's like, through your silly little skull, like I, or what, however he says it, phrasing it. Mm-hmm. But like, that's the part that really sticks out for me. Cause I'm like, God, he's such a dick, but he loves her so much. Like,
I know. He's just like, grr, don't you get it? I don't have words, but like, grr.
Finger. And when he's like, when I didn't even like you, I lusted for you. Like,
love that line. When I didn't even like you, I lusted for you.
That is the perfect description of enemies to lovers.
I know.
Which is, as I've mentioned time and time again, and I'm going to keep mentioning to it, favorite trope.
Oh, God. Whoever you end up being, you have so much to live up to. And we're so sorry, but I'm sure you're going to be
amazing.
I know
you're going to, because if the rest of the Bridgerton cast has anything to say about it, like, you're flawless. Just the way you are, because frankly, like, we have no complaints with anyone.
Seriously.
I've actually been like doing some serious fan casting for Kate with I don't know if you know her. Her name's Nick. She's huge on Twitter. She has the blog The Infinite Limits of Love. And like, I think like 4 or 5 times a day we send each other a different British actress and we're like, this would be a great cat, or Kate, this would be a great Kate. And like, we both have this hope that they make her or they cast a woman that's South Asian, because
they said that's what they're leaning towards.
Really? I think that would be so great and like amazing rep. And I really want to like manifest that into the world.
Reading something and they said that they're looking to do that.
So
my dream cast actually for Edwina is Anya Taylor-Joy. Like, I think that would be so – from the Queen's Gambit, like, she would be so perfect for Kate's sister Edwina. Like, she's like this diamond of the first water. And they're stepsisters anyway. So, like, I don't – well, first of all, I don't give a shit. I don't want to hear about they don't look like each other. But, like, second of all, they're stepsisters. So, like, you have – you do not even have anywhere to stand. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'm just like – I'm so excited for Kate and Edwina.
Yeah, that would be spot on casting, because that's like exactly how I pictured her, like big, almost like these big blue eyes and very fair and stuff. And yeah, I just that would be a really good casting for her.
But again, I don't really care who Edwina is. Edwina is great, and I'm excited to see her. But like Kate,
oh, our queen, I love her so much, and she's just like such a badass, and she just really puts Anthony in his place time and time again. It's remarkable. I love it.
It's okay. It's what he needs. You know, as much as we love him, it's what he needs.
Can you just like imagine? I just like there's going to be such. Okay, this is a spoiler if you haven't read the book, but there's going to be like a super zoom in, slow-mo of Anthony's mouth pressing against her skin to suck out that bee venom.
And oh, yeah.
So just like it's going to be that season's version of Simon rolling up his sleeves and showing his forearms where like Daphne gets the vapors from that. Like we're going to get that.
We're going to get the vapors from Anthony.
I already know I'm going to like pass out when this season airs, but.
Oh my God. I'm so excited for that. Like I'm so excited for that. It's funny because my sister recently watched Bridgerton. Yay. And she's read a few romance novels, but certainly not at the volume that I have. And she's just like, I just don't get Anthony. And I'm like, yes.
It's okay. I mean, we've talked about it at length. And it's so funny because everyone we talk to, like, we hear everyone being like, I don't know about Anthony. I don't know why he gets his own season. And everyone who's read the books is like, just wait.
Just wait. Homeboy has so much trauma to unpack. And, like, I'm so ready. The daddy issues are going to be slapped on the table and we're all going to have to see them. And, like, it's going to be amazing. I love it.
It is going to be so amazing. And this whole season was amazing. And I'm just so glad that like we've gotten to share the love of romance with so many other people, like so many people who had no idea really what was going on in the romance sphere have kind of been introduced to it. And I mean, the books are all on bestseller lists. So many books are so high up there. I'm so excited for all of our favorite authors and for all of the upcoming authors. Mm-hmm. Like this is a great time to kind of, I think, be a romance author. I mean, every time is a great time, but I'm excited for there to be a different conversation because I think we're going to have a lot of the same shitty conversations about romance. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just be honest. People are still going to come with the same shitty ass takes and Fabio comments.
Yeah.
But I think that there are a lot more like real conversations happening, which is nice to see.
I 100% agree. And you know, what's interesting is like, so I am also a dental student and when people found out that I was like writing or that I had written a book, there was like people thought that was neat at first. And then they find out it's a romance. And like, it's like I instantly lost like validity or like I don't know, like in that. But then all these people have started watching Bridgertons and like now they're super into it and stuff. And so it like it's just so it's so interesting to me how the show has like I don't know, up the validity of the genre for so many people, which in a way I'm like, fuck off. Like it was already valid. It's already amazing without this show. But like, I also love to see how it's, you know, infiltrating, you know, pop culture so much. And I think that's a really good thing.
Well, I feel a little bit the same with our podcast, right? Like our podcast, we've been a Regency romance podcast since day one. And I always felt like we were super niche, you know, and it was like, okay, are we going to get people to listen to us? Like, yeah, I know romance is a huge genre, but like, okay, the cross-section of romance, Regency romance, podcast listeners, you know, people who want to listen to podcasts about books, like that's not the hugest cross-section, I thought. But all of a sudden, I feel like we've gone from niche to like mainstream in a way, because like everybody knows what Regency romance is all of a sudden, you know? And so like, I'm really hopeful that, you know, our podcast will continue to grow and people will continue to find us and like, they'll find out more about Regency romance because of us and because of other things. Like I obviously, like I'm not expecting to change the world, but I love that there are so many more people that are excited about Regency. Mm-hmm. And because of that, and because of Bridgerton, I'm hoping that, you know, Regency grows a little bit in the ways that it needs to.
It's okay, guys. I'm just going to throw this out there. So when my grandma's like very academic she's 90 years old. Like, she's been a housewife her whole life, but she like really prizes like, you know, knowledge and academia. And like, I think she was a little heartbroken when like I didn't go into like academia myself, because like for a minute I was leaning that way. And I told her about this podcast, you know, she was kind of like, oh, when I was like, oh yeah, it's a Regency romance review. She's like, oh, okay. But guess who watched Bridgerton and thought it was great?
Grandma. Showed her. Yeah. No, I just think like there, I'm just so excited for the genre right now. And I think that there's like you said, I feel like so many doors are about to open. And, you know, even just the amount of articles coming out, like, okay, great. Now here's 15 more series or, you know, books that you need to adapt into a movie or a show. And I just like, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I want to read them all and watch them all and mm-hmm. all those things. So we're going to have to wait for Bridgerton. They're doing pre-production this spring, but my guess is 2022, probably Christmas 2022. What do you guys think? What would you guess?
Why does it have to be so far away?
I don't know.
Can't they just get it all done by Christmas 2021? And then we just get every Christmas release?
Oh my God. Could you imagine? Like next Christmas. Oh, that would be so amazing.
I understand that they started filming much later than they did the previous one, but I'm like, I don't think I can wait a whole nother year. I don't think I can wait 2 years between shows. I can't.
I feel like they were done with the editing a lot sooner than they released it. I think they held it for a long time.
They did hold it for a long time because they finished filming right before everything shut down in March.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like they finished filming March and then like, because everyone was like, when is it going to be released? Is it even going to be released this year? And then it was like, oh no, definitely going to be released this year. So I feel like they could do it.
Yeah. I feel like they have the budget to do whatever the fuck they want to.
Right.
True.
And hopefully, and hopefully that means they don't fuck it up, because I think like they should stick pretty closely to what they did this year and how they did it this season, because it was such a success. And so, and I felt like, you know, they really appreciated the fans and the original story and took a lot from the original. And that was, you know, what helped make it so successful. So anyhow.
And their use of like symbolism throughout the series too was amazing. Like all of the small moments where there's like tulips, where, you know, in Anthony's scenes, like there's a table where he sets his watch down and there's tulips on it. And like tulips are such a symbol for him and Kate. And like, I don't know, the mom is like embroidering tulips and, you know, she talks about how they symbolize passion and stuff. Like they just paid. I felt like there was so much respect given to the small things that like us as romance readers love and enjoy about the genre in making it. Like it was treated with care. Like it wasn't like we're going to take the romance out of this romance novel to make a show. It was like we are making a show that is a romance novel. And I love that.
And can we talk about how no one from who just watched season one understands what this B reference is that keeps floating through like the opening credits or like floating through social media? They're probably like, why is there this B all the time? Is it just because B for Bridgerton? It's like, spoiler.
No. Benedict has a bee embroidered on his collar. I was like,
did he? Oh my God, I missed it.
Yes, in the scene when he's talking to Sir Granville, like if you look at his collar, there's a bee.
Oh my God, my heart.
I know, right?
My actual heart. I'm dying right now. Yeah. Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I have to go rewatch the series. So we got to wrap up. Well, no, but seriously, Maisie, this was so fun, and we could talk all day. And we'll have you back again soon, maybe sooner than a year, because this is way too much fun. But, you know, where can people find you and find out more about you?
So the place I'm most active is Instagram, and I'm at romance.in.the.wild, which is, I wasn't thinking when I created that. But yeah, Romance in the Wild. You can also find me at my website, maisieeddings.com. I'm on Twitter, and my handle for that is foxygrandpa27. I was like not thinking through any of these handle choices.
Okay, you just didn't realize how big you would be. You didn't know you were a future author when you created your Twitter handle.
No, I definitely didn't. And that shows, but I can't give it up because like I had to go, you know, it's just too good. And but yeah, so those are where you can find me. And I talk a lot about all kinds of romance, and I'm on a huge historical kick right now. Like, I can't stop reading historicals.
Well, that's been my last, you know, 10 years or whatever.
I was going to say, that's like me all the time, so that's fine.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like your guys' semo. I love it.
Well, you know, can't stop, won't stop. So anyhow, Maisie, we were so grateful to have you today. This was so much fun. And we just, yeah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I love you girls. I think you guys are the best. And like, I just love this podcast. And I was so excited when you asked me. I was like, I texted my boyfriend right away. I was like, I'm going to get to talk about this show. And
he's like, okay. Yeah. Well, Zoe's like, so Maisie's going to come back on to talk about Bridgerton. I was like, yes.
It was true. We were very excited. All of a sudden, I was like, duh, Maisie needs to come. Like, yeah. We're going to gab and we're going to have such a great time doing it. And I was right. So listeners, thank you all for listening as well. We are so glad you're here. And we certainly hope that you come back for our last episode, which is recapping the Bridgertons. And that's going to be later this week. And guys, you're in for a treat because on Thursday, please join us for our recap of episode 8 with the amazing Tessa Dare and Jodi Picco.
I know, right? I'm still like, we did that episode. Yeah, guys.
I know, we did it. And both Zoe and I were like, what just happened?
I can't even fathom that.
So join us all on Thursday.
And may all your ever afters end happily.
Tea and Strumpets is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts.
Hi, I'm Morgan.
And I'm Isabeau.
And we're Romance.
Weekly podcast that looks at the history of romance, desire, tropes, and convoluted orgasm metaphors by talking through the sexiest parts, weirdest parts, and in-betweeniest parts of romance novels and the romance novel adjacent.
Novels like Awaken My Love by Robin Schoen,
Never Sweeter by Charlotte Stein,
or Shayna by Kathleen Woodowis.
It's Shanna!
Shayna.
And Aisha at Last by Usman Jalaluddin.
Join us next Wednesday on your favorite podcast app. And remember, loosen your stays,
but never your principles.